all about the pendants, baby.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
To start, press any key. Where's the any key?
Excuse me. I believe you have my stapler.
Welcome to We Are Technologies User Friendly with host Bill Sickens, technology architect.
And this is User Friendly. I am your host, Bill Sickens. Welcome to the show. Join the conversation online. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. We've got a lot of great questions coming in from everybody, and we are going to actually have a question and answer show coming up later this season. So get your questions out there. And I've heard a rumor that those that are used on the show will be eligible for a free t-shirt. Imagine that.
Dun, dun, dun.
User friendly swag. Can you imagine that?
That's pretty awesome.
I think it's really cool.
Hey, I haven't seen these designs yet. What does it look like? Or is that a surprise?
It's a secret for the moment, but oh. I'll show you.
And I actually have seen the designs. They're really cool.
Oh, awesome.
I think everybody's going to really like them. So anyway, we've got a great show this week. We actually have something that we've had to keep secret for a little while now.
Oh, and it's been really, really tough.
Yeah, it has. We actually got to meet this incredible production company from up in Vancouver, BC, at the VR conference a few weeks ago. And they let us have a sneak peek demo at a game called Evasion.
And they let us play it.
And they let us play it.
So much fun.
It was
just incredible. And I know all of us were on it along with Working in Preston. And it was just, I talk about a totally immersive, just incredibly well done game.
I didn't want to stop.
I mean, I've seen production software that's not as good as their beta version of this game. And it was just really cool. The studio is Archaeact. And we're going to be talking to some of the brains behind this, the brainchild, that have put this together, everything from the graphics department to the programming.
They were such a cool team. They were so full of energy and enthusiasm. It was amazing.
Well, and it was weird, too, because this was a total secret thing. The convention was actually held at the Hilton Hotel in San Francisco. And they were at another hotel across the street, set up in this back room.
Yeah.
Really beautiful hotel. I mean, I thought it was incredible, but it was a by invitation only thing. And then they were originally going to release a couple of weeks ago, but decided to delay just in honor of the people that got hurt in the Las Vegas shooting. Just to kind of give a moment of silence to be thinking about that. So they actually ended up delaying the release a couple of weeks. And here we are now. So that interview is going to be coming up. The other thing that we have this week is the Anime Bonsai Convention in Salt Lake City.
Yep, but it sounded like they had a lot of fun there.
Yeah, it sounds incredible. I don't know. And Jeremy, you've talked to us a little bit about the argument from anime and cartoons and all of that. So, but it did seem like this show was centered around Pokemon, and at least that I think was their theme. So Brian Rollins, our reporter from Salt Lake City, is going to be on here in a little while, giving us his review of the show as well as a couple of interviews with a couple of very talented people that were there. And I think we're really, really looking forward to that. The other thing that we have in our technology news today, Gretchen, these are some articles that I know you found.
Yeah.
Cryptocurrency and quantum computers. So tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah. I think the whole point was that I found those because I wanted you to tell us about it.
Actually, after looking through this and doing some background research to bring the details on this, I think that you were testing me a little bit.
Maybe.
But what we've got going on here is your browser, without your knowledge, might be being used to run certain cryptocurrencies. So we're going to talk about how to check on that and deal with it. And then the other thing of it is quantum computers. We've heard this term out there, and quantum's thrown around a lot.
Yeah, you use the term quantum a lot. I don't understand how.
Well, I use it correctly.
Oh.
Of course, anybody that is into quantum physics knows that that is not an exact definition.
Yeah, you changed it by actually talking about it.
But absolutely. And it's quantum sciences or quantum physics is something where you're looking for internal consistencies because we can't really prove it yet. But the term is thrown out there a lot. I know on the Orville they have a quantum drive instead of a warp drive and, you know, these type of things.
Well, they can't say the other things because they get yelled at.
No, this is true. This is true. But I find it interesting to see kind of where this term's going. But there
quantum
is,
has become the latest buzzword.
The latest buzzword is true. Yeah. But it is looking like quantum computers are going to become a reality. In fact, Google and IBM seem to be having a little bit of a showdown.
Hmm.
And we're going to talk about that a little bit as well. So that's what we're looking at for the show this week. Just a reminder to everybody, we are going to be on hiatus next week. And we'll be coming back into production the week after that. And there's a lot of very technical stuff as to why that is. I don't know. It's just what I was told on the schedule. So there we are. So I do hope and wish everybody a very happy Halloween. And we'll just remember, we're not going to be back next week, but we'll be back the week after that. And for right now, we're going to be back after the break. So don't go away. This is User Friendly. I am here with the team from Archeact Studios. Did I say it right?
That's right.
Oh, perfect, perfect. And we're looking at a brand new game called Evasion, which is going to be out on October 9th.
No, announcing October 9th.
Announcing October. Okay, I'm pushing them a little ahead of the game here. I mean, you know, we all as developers know that we can come up with this stuff in 5 minutes, right?
We'll be launching in spring of 2018. Today we're showing off our pre-alpha demo.
All right, sounds good. Yeah, we are actually sitting here in a room looking at the demonstration. I'm trying to explain this. We just actually went through it, and it was just really, really cool. Let's start out. Tell us a little bit about your studio and kind of where this came from.
So Archeact has been working exclusively on VR for about 4 years, all the way back to DK1 and doing Cardboard. If you name a VR headset, we've made something for it. But this project is super special. We've been working on it for over a year. It's designed specifically for PC, for high-quality CPUs, and it's a multiplayer VR bullet hell game. It's intense, it's action-packed, it's full of destruction, and we think that players who are really wanting that first-person shooter authentic experience will absolutely love it.
I mean, I think calling this a first-person shooter, it's accurate, but compared to what I would have thought of before about 5 minutes ago as a first-person shooter, this is actually very, very different. I mean, you're totally immersed in the environment.
Yeah, I was about to say, it's very immersive. Yeah.
And it was very easy to learn, too. So.
Oh, yeah, and I'm a person who does not play games. That's the first time I've ever played a game like that, and it was a lot of fun. Oh, my.
You were really great at it, too.
Oh, so thank you. I got a question for you, because you get the motion sickness and stuff. How did you do?
I didn't try it yet.
Oh, okay. Well, there you are. He's not green, so yeah. Either was the game or we knew that he...
So he's totally fine. Yeah.
Oh, I was able to watch. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Okay, usually he can't even watch. Yeah. So you were able to watch it and not get sick. Yes. So that's a good sign.
So how long have you been working on developing this?
This is about 14 months developing on this and working on the full game. But previous to that, we developed some multiplayer arcade content, and that's when we started working in Unreal and working on multiplayer experiences.
Okay. And I know I've played a little bit with the Unreal Engine since it first came out with the Unreal demo back in, I think, 96 or something. So obviously it's been upgraded just a touch since then. How has it been? So you've taken your content and used a game engine to deliver it. How did that work? And have you had any problems doing it that way? Or?
So we're a game development studio, so we're used to using the game engines. But we've been taking advantage of the latest technology that UE4 offers. So we've been really, as a team, we're upgraded to the very latest version of Unreal Engine, and we've been leaning into sort of the new physics simulation and the awesome graphics and lighting that UE4 can deliver to create the highest quality experience using that engine. And Unreal has been a partner really helping us maximize the engine and what we can do with it.
So now I know you said your team was 20, I believe.
Yeah.
So how has that worked? Because that seems like a small group to be able to put something this colossal together.
It's true. We are a small group, but we are very, very passionate, and we want to create really awesome things for VR. And we want to create, we're all VR gamers ourselves, and we want to create something that VR gamers will love. So one thing that really sets our game apart is it's built from the ground up for locomotion, as you guys tried out. And we have three different ways of locomoting in this demo, and we expect to launch with more and with a lot of settings. So we hope to serve every different gamer, but we don't offer any teleportation. It's all about that authentic experience of running around with your friends. We also have full body avatars powered by Ikinema, so you can see yourself and your friends in the game, and it's super high fidelity, and you can really get their sort of quirks and experience and behaviors in the game as well.
I know that was interesting because when you look down at yourself, you actually see yourself in the I guess armor.
Yeah, I was surprised when I looked down at my foot. I was like, oh hey, that's me.
Now, if we could just make that stick for real life, I would really be appreciative.
Yeah. That'd be cool.
We all want that. But we just want players to look really awesome, and so we feel that the player classes that we're creating really deliver that sort of action hero feel, and everybody looks really great in the game no matter what you're doing.
And the way that we can pull this off with such a small team is because, you know, we're kind of lean and mean and very agile. And so we basically take on, like, we scope it out based on, you know, what we think we can accomplish with this number of people and the time that we have. And everybody on the team is kind of a master of their craft, so we're really confident that we kind of just push what we can do and come up with something that is as good as we can do it with this small number of people.
And, you know, I want to ask you a question about the locomotion and then kind of come back to the team if I could, because I thought that was kind of a unique feature that I haven't really seen before, was that you could actually change the way that you interacted with the game. Now, the first time I tried it required doing kind of a quasi-running skill, which was way too active for me, so I switched to the other one. But tell us a little bit about where you came up with the idea of that and how that works. And I know you're going to launch some more modes, but even the three that were in there were really cool.
Yeah, I mean, we've been looking at what, you know, other games are doing, and we're constantly researching and learning from, you know, what other people are doing, and then we try it ourselves and we improve on it, and then we grab people from around the office and we say, hey, you want to try this out? How does it feel? And then we iterate on that. So it's definitely it's constantly a work in progress, but you know, there's kind of industry known techniques that that the VR industry as a whole is figuring out as we go, such as, you know, the kind of blinders and stuff that, you know, we give the option of turning that on or off, or having a slider to show, like, how strong we want it to be. But it's basically just trial and error and testing and seeing what feels good.
Yeah, and with a really wide range of players, so you want to test with every person who sort of walks up and says, actually, I get really sick, and we want to make sure, okay, we want to support them and create modes of locomotion that they feel comfortable with for the widest audience, that because we want everyone to enjoy the game.
Now, when you actually launch this as a finished product, I know there were five of us playing, I think it was what it was.
Four of us.
Four. Okay. What is going to be the number of people that can be involved when it's actually in an online world and all of that's done?
So all of the teams are 1 to 4 players. You can play by yourself for an intense action experience, but we recommend going in there with a squad and really, really enjoying the game and interacting with each other. And we also have 4 player classes, so you can do 1 of each different class. We're showcasing 2 today, but we'll have 4 at launch. And or you can run in with all of 1 class or all of a different class. The other thing we offer is that you can drop into a game if it's already started. So the VR community is still a smaller community, and we want to support multiplayer, so we want to find the ways of getting the most players in the game so that you have a lot of players to check it out with.
Now, I know you said that you're working with, I think, the Oculus headset here and a high-end CPU. What is it, like an Intel i7? Or what will you recommend going out the gate to be able to run this correctly?
We want to support all the VR-ready computers, but we do recommend sort of the higher-end PCs are obviously going to have a better experience, but i5 to i7, we also support up to... We haven't listed our lowest graphics card yet, but if you have a VR-ready PC, we want you to be able to play Evasion.
Well, that sounds absolutely incredible. Now back to my question about the team. 20 people, what kind of disciplines do you have? Because it's got to be more than just one thing, I would think.
Oh, yeah. We have a very passionate team of engineers, artists, game designers, technical artists.
QA.
The
full group, right? There's, we have like physics engineer, we have animators, environment artists, character artists,
and developers designing our AI. We have our own AI developed in-house as well. So, yeah, it's a big team of just really passionate people, and I'm so happy to work with them every day.
I mean, like, because it is a small team, I mean, like I said before, everyone's kind of a master of their craft, right? So, you know, everyone kind of owns an area.
have to be agile, and sometimes you take on things that are a little bit new or totally that you have to learn, because we're always working with the latest technology, but the team is, you know, hungry for working with the newest tech. So,
well, but that's part of the fun of it too. You know, they say when you enjoy your job, it's not a job, and it obviously is that's the case with you guys here.
Yeah, we play every single day. We always do multiplayer testing at least twice a day with four people. We'll get in there, and when anyone wants to play, we're like, "Yep, we're in." You just have to like, okay, only four. We only have four spots.
Yeah. My goodness, if I did that at work, I'd get yelled at.
Really?
Does anybody have any other questions?
I just wanted to say the jogging mode that you put in there, I do get a little susceptible to sickness, not like Jeremy, but it was not only was a good exercise, but there was absolutely no motion sickness. I felt like I was running to the places where I was going, and so it was all very fluid and very natural.
Great.
Awesome. Yes. Yeah. It's great exercise, as you said.
Yeah, I mean,
I noticed that, yeah.
Yeah.
Now you can get a workout playing video games.
Yeah, that's the best part. Yeah, we that one was really just people in the office just imagining what we could do, and knowing that that's a technique to sort of reduce motion sickness, and then just testing with different people around the office. And we even have engineers and game designers in their yoga pants, like running around. So,
Cardio
mode.
Yeah,
like that. All right, so the game is Evasion. Announcement date is October 9th. How do they find you?
We'll be at evasionvrgame.com. The game is launching on Oculus Rift and HTC Vive in spring 2018, and we are from Archeact.
All right, sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. Jump on and let us know what you think about this whole VR thing. We'll be back after the break.
Welcome back to User Friendly. One User Friendly on Facebook, One User Friendly on Twitter, userfriendlyshow.com. Jump online, join the conversation. We'd love to hear from you.
So you were just about to ask me about our topics, right?
Yes, I was just about to ask you about our topics. What do we have in the news today?
Well, we have, the first one is something about quantum computing and Google, and where was it, IBM or something like that? I don't understand any of these fancy terms. So,
well, like
can you
we were talking about
what a quantum computer is?
I can certainly do that.
Okay.
What we actually should do to start that is we already complained about the word quantum being used to describe everything. However, this actually probably is a little more accurate implementation of it. So I think this is going to be one of those more technical topics. I'm just warning everybody right now. But I think the best thing to do is describe how a classic computer works in a very broad sense, because this will kind of give us a reference point for the idea of quantum computers.
All right.
So basically, your desktop computer, your laptop, whatever it is, even the computer in your phone, runs on what's called a binary process.
So it's zeros and ones.
Zeros and ones. And the way that works is in the CPU, there's something called an AND gate, and you have an electron that is either present or absent, zero or one.
Yes or no. Okay.
So that would be basically two stages.
All right.
And when these kind of computers were originally designed, present and absent was the known stages of the electron. Now, more have been found, but they've never really been implemented. There's a neutral state that they played with a while back and that type of a thing.
Okay.
But again, it's still basically the same thing that it always was, a binary process. It's digital, present or absent, alive or dead, you know, that kind of an idea. But the thing of it is the more states that you can have of that, the more power that the computer is capable of actually doing and processing.
Okay.
So now going along with this and also relevant is the bit, what's called the bit type of the computer, the bit length. So originally computers were 8 bits. There's even smaller ones than that. But the ones that you use now started out 16, 32, 64. Most of the stuff that we use in binary is a 64-bit language. So that means every time a process runs, there's a 64 bits or 64 zeros and ones that are run through the processor and manipulated in some way. And it actually gets a lot more technical than that, but that just to kind of give an overall sense.
Okay.
So what they're doing now is putting together an idea of what they call a quantum computer. And the states that this is capable of are called a qubit. And this is something that they're trying to build into. This would be very similar to the, well, it would be exactly that, is the different stages of an electron. It uses a little different system for doing it, but allows for much more than a binary zero and one environment.
Okay.
And this is something that's been played out. They're working on trying to build these things, and IBM, Google, and most of the big companies out there have been involved in this in one way or another that build things like this over the years.
Okay, can I throw out an idea?
Sure.
Is it like you have, instead of just black or white, you have dark black, now you have less dark black, and then you get to the point where you're in the middle of gray, and then you're getting lighter and lighter? Is it something along those lines?
It's like having, that would be a way of kind of illustrating different states.
Okay.
But the thing of it is if you think of a CPU that can only process two states, versus one that the theoretical limit for quantum computers is 56.
Wow.
So now through that same cycle, through that same process, you're able to do exponentially more information. And in order to test this out, there's been a number of different approaches to this. And the first one would be building a what they call a quantum supercomputer. But they've been trying to simulate the task on a regular PC.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's happened here is it looks like IBM has actually come up with a way to do this.
Wow.
And this was something that was previously considered to be impossible. The closest right now that anyone has gotten out there to testing the limit was a 55-qubit simulation by the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Zurich. And in order to process that and do that, one of the things that you need on quantum computing is massive amounts of memory.
Okay.
So even by today's standards. So you buy a regular PC at the store, you have 8 gigs of RAM, 16 gigs of RAM, something like that. The Zurich simulation required 500 terabytes of memory.
Ouch.
So you're looking at a huge, huge amount of things. IBM's new system is able to simulate 56 qubits with only 4.5 terabytes.
Hmm.
So still a lot of memory.
That is a lot.
But more manageable and certainly a lot more.
So what are the advantages of a device that has these variables?
Speed, for one.
Speed.
Yeah,
okay.
The capability. As our computers get faster, we do more and more things, like our voice recognition systems that are out there now, and we're starting to get into artificial intelligence
okay. And
deep machine learning and these type of things. But one of the big things here is speed, because you can do, theoretically, 56 times the processing capability on one cycle on a quantum processor. Now, some of the things that these do present is issues like cryptography. Basically, if you had a cryptography algorithm that was created by a quantum computer, it would be, they say, impossible to break. Now, I've always said that there's no kind of encryption that's completely impossible to get around, but it would certainly be much, 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 much more difficult.
Wow.
You're looking at stuff like that, but you're also looking at just basically capabilities for moving in the direction of artificial intelligence, that type of thing. The ability to compute fast and these type of things is a big part of it. And there's a lot more to it. Anybody that's into quantum computing knows that we are just hitting the head of the iceberg or the tip of the iceberg here in this discussion.
Huh.
And this would be a topic that could certainly go on for a lot longer than we have. But that gives you an idea of the start of it. Now, are we going to see a quantum computer on the market over at Costco in the next few years? Probably not. But we certainly are going to be headed in that direction. And, you know, as we go to this...
So machines like this would be really helpful for their plans to do, like, some kind of mission to Mars or any kind of exploration-type modules?
Well, that would certainly be part of it. And, you know, you look at the different things we're dealing with that. And keep in mind the original moon missions, more power that's in your watch. Or less power, rather.
Less power than our digital watch.
Digital watch. I mean, the smartwatch is way over the top on that type of the thing. But the faster you can processes that you can get in any kind of a computer make these things easier.
Mm-hmm.
And simulations, if we want to use Star Trek as a comparison for some of the things they do in that, you're looking at the ability with parallel processing and quantum processing to be able to actually meet those type of situations, to be able to analyze, break things down, put them back together. Certainly things with virtual reality and eventually holographic simulations and that type of thing would benefit from this type of a situation. rendering something, like simply a cartoon.
Wow.
Rebels is back on the air. All of that's done digitally. Simpsons is the same way. That could really be benefited from these type of things. And the list goes on and on.
I want my flying car.
Well, I'm not sure this would really play into that, but...
well, if the computer is fast enough, it might be able to do it.
It's possible. And a few other things, like thrust. But, so what else do we have?
Well, the other thing, I have no idea what it is. Cryptocurrency. I can't even wrap my mind around it, so I figured, oh, hey, I bet you Bill can explain this.
Yeah, something like that. Okay, cryptocurrency, first of all, you're talking about things like Bitcoin.
Okay, and I don't even think I understand what Bitcoin is.
Okay, well, Bitcoin is a virtual cryptocurrency.
Yeah, it doesn't really exist.
It doesn't really exist, so there's no government that backs it up like the dollar or the yen or something
like
that.
Okay, I think that's why I don't understand.
Yeah, it's something that's been out there. There's been a lot of controversy about this because historically any currency that has nothing to back it up almost always, or actually I think always has failed. There's
so this is like donuts on The Simpsons.
Yeah, that kind of an idea. At least okay. The donuts you get something virtual for.
Yeah.
But cryptocurrency also has the other side that it's very difficult to track.
Okay.
So there are certain situations and you don't have conversion and other things like you do within classic currency. So it has some benefits to it that allow it to be used. It's used a lot on the dark web and that type of thing because of its difficulty to track. But you actually can go out and use it for legitimate purposes to buy a car and that type of a thing. But the thing is the use of computers to set the value and track what's going on, and the values of cryptocurrency change. And then there's different kinds of cryptocurrencies. It's not just Bitcoin.
Oh.
So you have all this type of stuff. And what has been happening, according to Wired Magazine, is hackers have found a way to inject JavaScript-based cryptocurrency mining software into compromised sites, borrowing your processing power from your own computer. So what happens is you don't even know that this is running, but it's using CPU time on your machine, slowing down your computer to be able to work with these different systems.
Well, okay, so what does the mining do? I mean, it's not like, do they gather fragments of information and make up a piece of currency?
Well, basically what is going on, okay, legitimate browser-based mining software allows different sites to be able to monitor their content and do different things with it. So as the currency value is changing, among other things, that's what this type of thing is for. It's a distributed computing platform. And there are times that you would want to legitimately use that. But in the case of what's going on here is they want to steal processor time from your desktop PC.
So is this like that story a couple of years ago where your washing machine or your refrigerator is sending out spam emails?
That would be a similar thing where something's taken over your situation. So if this is something you're concerned about, there is actually a browser extension called NoCoin. And respectively disables cryptocurrency mining tools on sites that you haven't approved. And would be something to throw on there. This is also something that's not picked up right now by a virus scanner. So watching it from another end is important.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now, if you're not involved in cryptocurrency and that type of a thing, this may not be as applicable. But if your computer's slowing down and you've tried everything else, it might be something to check.
Good advice.
So, again, we're just hitting the tip of the iceberg on it. There's a lot more to these conversations. But shoot your questions over. I'd love to see them and be happy to answer any of this more specifically on the air. And that is userfriendlyshow.com. Option there to send your information in. Well, we'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. This last weekend was the Anime Bonsai Con in the Salt Lake City area. And joining me today is our reporter, also from Salt Lake City, Brian Rollins, who's been on the show a couple of times now, who is going to be giving us some background life from the floor of the convention. But first, he's going to tell us a little bit about it. Brian, welcome to the show.
Hey guys, this is Brian reporting on my time at Anime Bonsai this last weekend. I had so much fun meeting everyone there. This year, Bonsai had an overall Pokemon theme. This meant that all of their signs had a Pokemon feel, they had a Pokemon-themed scavenger hunt, and they had Jamie McGonigal as a guest, who has had several roles in the Pokemon show. As this was an anime convention, nearly all of the guests have had several roles as anime voice actors. Voice acting in anime is a different thing from other voice acting roles, and requires a bit of a different skill set. This is because in anime, the animation is already complete as the voices are originally in Japanese. This means the actor has to fit each line into a specified amount of time and match the existing lip flaps of the character. That can make the acting part of it much more difficult, but all of these guests do an amazing job still providing that experience and feeling. Banzai had a lot of great things this year, including rooms set aside where you could sit and watch episodes of new or popular anime, and a game room with tons of free-to-play arcade machines and gaming consoles set up. They were the perfect places to take a load off, or just rest for a bit. I know I did, I spent quite a bit of time gaming there. They also had a giant green screen booth set up, where you could pick from hundreds of backgrounds, have your photo taken, and have it printed out for free. Normally, going to conventions, you will see quite a few people in cosplay. At Banzai, though, it seemed that more than half of the attendees had dressed up as a favorite character. And I'm not just talking about a simple design or a shirt they were wearing, these people went all out. You could tell how much they loved these characters by the detail and the time they put into these costumes. The best thing about Banzai, though, is that they really care about their attendees. This actually is a non-profit convention, meaning that all of the money they make each year is poured right back into the con for the next year. Our very own Warky has been a regular guest at Banzai for the last 11 years, and keeps coming back year after year because he loves it so much. Anytime I'm in Utah in October, I will make sure I have time set aside for Anime Banzai. This was their 13th year, and based on the positivity of the fans, I can't see any problems with this con continuing on for many more years to come. So if you want to be part of the fun next October, make sure to check them out at animebanzai.org. Again, this is Brian reporting for User Friendly.
Brian, thank you so much for that. And with no further ado, let's go live to the floor of Anime Banzai with our first guest, voice actor Michaela Laws, who's going to tell us a little bit about what she does.
Hey, this is Brian here at live at Anime Banzai with Michaela Laws, famously known for doing Seduce Me Otome. So, Michaela, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hi, everyone. My name is Michaela Laws, obviously. Mm-hmm. I voice Yandere-chan in Yandere Simulator. I also voice Sylvana in AFMAU's Minecraft series. And I also do my own game development work. So I do a lot of visual novels, such as Seduce Me the Otome, Remember, Remember, Blind Love, things you can find on itch.io and Steam, actually.
Oh, awesome. So I want to ask, how did you get your start in voice acting?
With voice acting, it was literally a spark of just inspiration. So I went to a convention, mm-hmm. and I saw there was a workshop going on. And I was like 12, 13 at the time. And I was surrounded by these like 20, 30-year-old like men and women who wanted to really get into the industry.
Okay.
And he was picking volunteers to read off for this anime. And me being as like crazed as I was, I rose my hand amongst all these 20-year-olds. And yeah. I got picked. I'm like, wait, what? So I'm walking up down the aisle and I read off for this character. And I see my voice coming out of this character. I'm like, I want to do that. That's cool. And lo and behold, I just did a bunch of research online. I was doing projects. I was auditioning for directors. And now I'm working for Yandere Dev in Yandere Simulator. I'm working with Jess in AFMAU. And it's just been a really cool experience, just out of research and out of just dedication.
Okay. So what's some good advice you have for others who are trying to do what you did, to get into voice acting? What?
Research. The biggest thing I always try to tell people is just research what you want to do. You don't want to just go in blind and then all of a sudden you're just doing something that no one really does and you're just like, should I be doing that? No. Think about what you want to do specifically. There is animation, there's commercials, there are video game work, there is indie work. It's just there's a bunch of different avenues that you can take, and what sparks your interest is what will help guide your path. For example, if you want to be like an animation voice actor, look on making a demo, looking at what characters you can do, and just trying to find all these directors and avenues that will benefit you and make you a better performer and a better asset for directors.
Okay, so you're saying find those things that you're passionate about and focus on those rather than just trying to do anything.
Right? Correct. Okay. Like, everyone loves jacks of all trades. They're really cool. It's yeah. great. But masters of their arts go farther.
You've got to have one thing that you're great at, and that'll help you out more. Okay.
Exactly.
Awesome. So what is one project or one voice character, anything that you're specifically proud of doing that you really loved?
Actually, it's Yandere-chan from Yandere Simulator. Mm-hmm. I've been with this character for 2 years now, and she continues to surprise me. Like, I remember back in January of 2015, I asked Andre Dev, hey, if you need me for anything, just let me know. I'm a voice actor. Here's my demo reel. Please let me know if you need any assistance at all. And he just comes up to me and he's like, well, I don't know whether or not I can pay you for this, but this is what I need, and do you think you can do that? And of course, I was really excited about the project. I'm like, yes, of course, here's what I can do. I recorded some samples, and we went back and forth for like a good 3 months working on what is now the intro of the game. If you start a new game after you customize your senpai and yourself and all that, the monologue that you hear took 3 months to do.
Wow.
So building her with Yandere Dev was such a great experience, and then going off after that into the following like year and a half that followed,
mm-hmm.
it's building the character, fixing her voice, giving her different motivations. She has so many layers that people don't understand, and yet when I look at Yandere-chan, I just see this epic like portrait that has taken years of work. So that's what I'm most proud of, and character-wise.
Awesome. And it sounds like you got to be part of the character development with that, and so that's got to be part of why it was so amazing too.
Oh no, yeah, it's fun when you get to really close to a director where you're helping develop the character. Like it's very rare for it to happen,
because
sometimes you'll be cast to be like, oh, you just do this and whatever. But working with your character and developing her alongside the process just not only puts your name on it, but also gives you a reason to make her better.
Of course. That's awesome. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what visual novels are, because that's not as popular a thing. People know about like voice acting in games and audiobooks, and this is kind of the niche in between, right?
Yeah. It's hilarious, because I like to refer to it as interactive storytelling.
Mm.
So what visual novels are, it's you're literally reading a story, but it has the visuals for you. So it's not like a movie where you're just sitting there watching things happen. It's you're reading a book, and throughout the story, you'll get choices that can turn the tides. For example, if you're trying to either side with the hero or the villain, mm-hmm. and you get that choice, you get to decide where the story ends. It could be with the hero, and you're saving the princess and saving the kingdom, or you can go with the villain, burning everything, and all of a sudden, you're the demon lord. And seduce me. It's just so fun with visual novels that they're not necessarily games where you're like, for example, PUBG, where you're shooting people, or Overwatch, where you're doing it's high noon. It's a story that's already there, and you're putting your spin to it, where it's like, I want my story to go this way.
So it's a little bit choose your own adventure, but more in depth than that, not just those. Okay. Well, that's awesome. And so so you're a creator of these visual novels, writer as well.
Oh yeah. I very much pride myself, because I originally wanted to just do novels,
mm-hmm.
but I thought that was boring. I'm like, everyone does a book. Everyone's like, I'm writing a book. I'm writing a novel, a series. And my dad's writing a series. And I love my dad to death, but it's like, that's boring. That's just sitting there clacking away at a typewriter and then releasing pages of words. When I saw visual novels and dating sims, I'm just like, wow, I can see the characters, I can be part of the story, and I can just experience like almost like a game. So I did my research on it, and it's really valuable just to have on your phone or on your computer, just be like, I just need a break. I don't want to shoot things. I just want to kick back, read a good story. Mm-hmm. But I don't just want to sit on my Kindle and just like flip through the pages. I just want to do something. So it's like that nice little middle ground where you can just sit there, relax, and enjoy a story.
It's nice and relaxing. That sounds really amazing.
Oh, yeah.
So are there any upcoming projects that you can tell us about?
I'm actually excited about one project called All For You.
Mm-hmm.
It is a dating sim with a twist. It's
mm-hmm.
dating sims have actually become a very popular genre of visual novel. As I'm told by like YouTube Let's Plays and just Hatoful Boyfriend being a popular one, the Sakura series being another. A lot of people are just kind of looking at this and going, okay, so dating sims have this, this, and this, and this. And they're all niches. It's become very stereotypical. And for me, I kind of looked at that and went, all right, but what if we did this? And what I like to do with a lot of all my stories, I like to give it a little twist in a certain direction.
Mm-hmm.
So with All For You, I decided to twist it all the way around just to see what would happen. And the demo's out right now, and the response from it was just, wow, this is really cool. I'm not going to spoil it, because I want people to actually experience the demo, but it's a nice little twist where you play it, and then you realize, oh, God, this is where it's going to go. So it's not like, oh, it's a dating sim where you date girls, blah, blah, blah. No, there's a deeper story, and you need to figure it out. So
okay.
There's that. And that's all I can really talk about right now. But
so where do we find that demo?
That demo can be found on my itch.io, vamichaelalaws.itch.io. It is free to download. You can play it, and you can enjoy it as much as you want. It will hopefully be available on Steam as well, but we're hoping to have both the full game and the demos on itch.io and Steam.
And a lot of your other projects are available on Steam already, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, if you go on Steam and you literally type Michaela Laws in the search bar, you'll see all of my games, all of my projects that you can possibly either download or buy.
Perfect. Thank you so much for that information. It's really exciting talking to someone who's done a little bit of a niche with visual novels instead of the regular voice acting or games. And all right. And again, this is Brian with Michaela Laws here at Anime Bonsai.
Brian, thank you. Next up is an interview with Jamie McGonigal, voice actor in Pokemon. Brian, welcome back.
So, hey, this is Brian and Julia Rollins here at Anime Bonsai with Jamie McGonigal. Jamie, go ahead and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm a voice actor. I live in Washington, D.C. I do a lot of work in advocacy, and as a voice actor, you might have heard me in Pokemon as Barry and Trip, Ash's rivals, and also Grumpig. Also been in Yu-Gi-Oh! And One Piece and Huntic and a whole lot of other anime. I've been doing it for about 20 years, so I have a long list of things that I've been able to do and been
lucky enough to. It's amazing. Been in so many popular anime like that.
Oh, I know, I'm a guest of honor. Very fancy.
So many people that love those genres.
All my hotel room is coated in gold, so you know. I know.
Yeah.
This particular Hilton has that one gold room
just for you. So you've been a voice actor for quite a while. Back 20 years ago, how was it different from today getting started in voice acting?
I think it's for the most part the same. And it's different for anyone. You know, of course. You get a different when you ask the origin story of any voice actor.
Yep.
They'll tell you something entirely different. I happen to be doing a musical. I was a musical theater actor in New York for a long time. And I was doing a show in South Jersey, and someone I was in that show with, her name was Leah Applebaum, and she said, hey, you'd be really great at this. Can I pass your name along? And I was like, well, yeah, of course. So she had been in Pokemon. She passed my name along to someone at sci-fi.com. So my first title was called Barbarian Moron. It was a flash cartoon.
Okay.
That had like 30-second episodes. It was kind of amazing. And you can still find it in the, you know, the dark web. Still
in the archive somewhere. Yeah.
In the dark web.
Yeah, that's how I got my start. A lot of folks have, you know, they submitted a demo and they did something more traditional. I find most folks that I know that got into it through meeting someone or someone they knew recommended them. That being said, there's plenty of other opportunities and other ways to get into it.
Well, that makes sense. I mean, if you're already in theater and they know that you can project, they know that you can, enunciate the words and act, then they're like, perfect.
Yeah.
So it's like you already auditioned for everybody already.
Right. Well, a lot of folks, that's the biggest question we get at every convention we come to, where people say, hey, how can I be a voice actor? And the first thing that we always respond with, okay, the most important part of the term voice actor is actor.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can sit in my room for days and make up great, funny voices, but if I don't know how to create a character, if I don't know how to go into a booth and kind of on the spot understand what coming up with that character's background is, where they come from, who they are, and know what their story is, it becomes a lot harder to make that character authentic. Like, you can do all the voices you want, and you can hear the difference between, you know, actors who actually do the work and understand something about the characters they're playing, and folks who just jump in the booth and make up a voice, which is fine. There's you know, plenty to be said for people who can do that. I prefer personally to listen to people who understand that character and add something to it. You know.
Yeah, and I feel like a big part of voice acting is also being able to take direction, because that's not something that everyone can do.
That's also really, really hard for a lot of people. And I worked in musical theater for so long. Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't know how to take direction, you're not going to last long. And it's hard you know, it's such a personal job. It's hard not to take things personally, you know, especially as an actor who was doing, you know, non-voice work for a long time. You walk into that room, you audition, and you give it all your all, and you walk out, and if they don't want you, that's them rejecting you. You know, there's no two ways about it. Like, that's it's very trying emotionally to be an actor. When you're doing it, it can be really challenging emotionally to deal with it. And if you haven't developed those tools as well, going into this as a career, you can become really depressed, to be honest, to be experiencing that rejection, because most of it is rejection, let's be honest. Like, for every 100 roles you audition for, you're going to get one. The odds are a little bit better usually in voice acting, but for stage acting, that's the average. Wow. You know, if you look at the working actors that are out there, there's not a lot of us. So
you got to learn how to deal with that rejection, because it's going
to
happen.
Yeah. There's a lot of emotional work that needs to be done there that I think people take for granted.
Okay. Well, on a lighter note, what's one role or one character that you really enjoyed doing?
I love playing Barry on Pokemon. He's super fun, and I think one of the reasons I like him so much is because he's one of the more important, or not more important, but larger roles that's more recognizable, that has gotten me into a lot of these conventions and conferences where I can come and talk about the things that I want to talk about, and it gives me a platform. I love him. I love Barry. He's so energetic and really fun. But I think Takeo and Magic Users Club, it's not a title a lot of people know, but that was my first series that I was able to really dive into and create a character. So Takeo, I think, is probably closest to my heart, with, I guess, a close second to Viva Piñata, where I played Teddington Twinger Snaps. That show was what we did. We did that as a prelay, which means that we recorded it first, and then they do the animation afterwards. Everything up until then I'd done, with the exception of Barbarian Moron, was a dub. So I actually get the chance to create something from scratch, and I felt this sense of ownership over him, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
And I understand dubbing's a little bit harder because you have to match what's already there. Right?
Yeah, you match the lip flap, but it's harder because you not only have to match the lip flap, but you have to create this character and make this character fit into these tiny little pieces.
Yeah,
it's challenging, but like, it's a really good challenge. It's, I think any actor who's, you know, a well-known stage actor or TV or film actor should have to voice act at some point, because it teaches you how to take everything that you know and put it into this tiny little piece of you, if that makes sense. You have to make yourself so small and concentrate everything you usually have, your arms and your legs and your hands and your face to express, and make it just about your voice.
And your voice. That's so cool. All
right. Yeah, so it seems like you like the roles that get you the door open to be able to be at convention stuff, but you also have the ones that are super close to your heart.
Yeah, of
that
course.
You're just like, oh, these were the original. They're small. No one's going to have heard of them, but I love them.
You know,
so that's what it sounds like. But you said the one helps you open up doors to be able to go to conventions and other things where people recognize you because of that role. Talk a little bit more about, like, what kind of doors does that open for you? Like, what do you like to talk about when you get to be on that platform for the more, you know, well-known roles?
Absolutely. Funny you should ask. I'm an LGBT advocate. I'm a gay man. I'm a married gay man. I've been an activist for a lot of years, and I've been doing the voice acting thing for 20 years, and I found early on that if I can have some sort of platform, as a person who grew up with no role models, really, with no one gay that I could look at in culture, in media, I found that, hey, if I can be this person for one little kid out there that can look at me and say, hey, that's something I want to do, and wait, I'm gay, and I can still be successful and happy and live a happy, wonderful life, then I'd be honored, you know. So I try my best to use the platforms when I come to these cons to speak up about that, to talk to people about how they can stand up in their own communities, how they can support one another. A lot of the cons I go to will have these panels where we talk about LGBT issues, and so frequently 3/4 of the room is straight, and but they're there because they want to support their friends and don't know how. So I'm there to kind of be a non-judgmental as I get, person in their life that they don't know, that they don't have to worry about what my opinion is, but I'm going to be honest about what my feelings are on the topic and what I know helped me as a kid growing up, and what I hear from kids now. Things are still really tough. You know, I can get married legally, but I can't adopt kids legally in every state. There's still a lot of places, a lot of states that I can get fired for being gay. I can get evicted for being gay. And it's 10 times worse for trans people. So if I can talk about that a little bit, when I have this platform given to me by these great cons who don't mind me spouting off at the mouth when I get there, then I'm thrilled by it. It's
okay. So Jamie, how can our listeners find you and follow your work and upcoming things that you have?
I have a website. It's jamiemcg.me. JAMIEMCG.me. I did have jamiemcg.com, but I let it lapse years ago, and now I apparently can buy porn there in Japan, or skincare. I don't know exactly what it was, but someone else owns it. That's not me. But jamiemcg.me. I'm Mick Benefit on Twitter, MCBENEFIT.
Okay.
And I'm on Facebook as well with my own name, Jamie McGonigal.
All right, well, thanks so much for these words. It's been wonderful talking to you.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And again, this is Brian and Julia Rollins here at Anime Bonsai with Jamie McGonigal. Thanks so much.
Brian, thank you so much for that. Well, Comic-Cons never cease, and even though we're getting deep into the fall here and Halloween, we actually have another one coming up in a couple of weeks in Denver, Colorado. Warky's going to be covering that live for us, so no further ado is needed. We'll be covering that in a moment. We'll be back after the break. Welcome back to User Friendly. It is amazing how many different areas are considered quantum. But even the definition of the word itself is still varies a little bit. So I guess that actually would make a lot of sense. But shoot in your questions. I know that with the news topics, we just hit the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more information on that and so much more in depth we want to go. So let us know what you want to hear and we will talk about it. Sounds like the Anime Bonsai Convention was a great success. Brian, thank you so much for bringing all that to us in the live interviews. And check out Evasion, Archeac Studios, virtual reality system, Oculus, and I believe it works with a couple of others, but you can get the details off of their website, which we will put on our social media, and you can check it out from there. Again, we're going to be away next week, but we will be coming back the week after that. This is User Friendly, keeping you safe on the cutting edge.
User Friendly is copyright 2017, User Friendly Media Group, Inc., all rights reserved. Music used under license. Opinions expressed on this show are those of the hosts and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of User Friendly Media Group, Inc., or this station.